Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Leadership in a time of extreme crisis.
First, a leader has to realize that you're not probably not the smartest person in the room, but you need to know who is.
A conversation about leadership, life and death leadership. This is 880 In Depth, and I'm WCBS's Tim Scheldt. These past 2 months, we've seen all kinds of examples of crisis leadership, good, bad, and frankly, some ugly. In this podcast, we'll hear from one expert who's been there, who can talk about what it takes and what's needed in a crisis. Our reporter, Mac Rosenberg, pitched the story for In Depth. Nuclear safety expert Dr. Charles Casto was sent to Japan in 2011 as the U.S. government lead in the Fukushima nuclear meltdown. You may remember back then when a powerful earthquake and tsunami ravaged that region of Japan, killing an estimated 15,000 people. The disaster was immediately complicated by a nuclear meltdown at Fukushima because of the earthquake damage and the loss of power there. Hundreds of thousands were at risk of nuclear exposure. The U.S. sent in Dr. Castell, and through that experience, he is now a crisis consultant. Dr. Castell is now hosting a new podcast series for Diversion Podcast called Crisis Leadership, Coronavirus Edition. It's why our Mac Rosenberg wanted to get him on the line.
Tell me, what are some of the myths out there about crisis leadership?
Well, that oftentimes that we are over-optimistic, that we believe that we can control the situation. So the optimistic bias really blinds us from an extreme crisis. Most times leaders have experience and they think, well, this situation is just a little bit worse than my normal experience. So you're blinded by the signals that come in. And with that, you know, all the things that you've learned about groupthink, optimistic bias, all of those blind you from the unfathomable. You know, many of these events, extreme crisis events, are unfathomable. So it's very convenient not to think of them.
Yeah, and that's one of the big problems that you mention with crisis leadership. That failure to imagine, a failure to say, hey, something catastrophic like pandemic or a hurricane could happen. And that's something that, you know, you say that should be on the minds of people. But why do you think that doesn't happen enough?
Well, I think that we get into the mode of past history, that we don't have enough diversity in many of our companies, and in particular in the government, enough diversity of thought to break that mindset that we have. In America, one thing about Americans, they're very optimistic. That's a challenge or an opportunity both with our culture. I think it actually comes from World War II and a lot of things that we've experienced over the years, that, you know, with New York strong, Boston strong, what we were able to do with World War II, and again, here we are with the pandemic, where we're able to marshal resources and address a challenge. So oftentimes we just have this, as Westerners, we often have the mindset that we can meet any challenge. So then the pessimism is, you know, the Cassandra principle, you know, people who are pessimistic. You know, she thought that the Greeks were, you know, are going to have a Trojan horse when they attack Troy. But, you know, people pushed her down because, you know, because they said, you know, you're just being negative, right? Mm. So our willingness, our ability to overcome difficulties is our greatest strength, but it sometimes can be our greatest weakness as well.
Something that is so different about this particular crisis, you think of the word crisis, a lot of the times you think about a singular event. You mentioned like Boston Strong, you know, World War II obviously was drawn out a little bit more. I think a lot of people have compared what we're going through now to a war effort. It's a drawn out thing. It's a drawn out event. It's a daily thing. And it's an invisible enemy, as you talk about in your podcast. So what kind of elements does a leader need to draw upon in this type of crisis versus a 9/11, where it happens, it leaves a path of destruction, and we recover from there? You know, it's a quicker recovery, more calculated.
Right. Well, I think first is to think about how we respond to these events, these crises. It typically follows a pattern. I think I talk about that in the podcast, a pattern of the first is denial. Right. And then the second is muddling, where you muddle around to do a few things and you think, OK, this will be enough. And then finally, there's the panic stage, or not finally, but next is the panic stage, where you say, hey, this thing is really much bigger than we thought it was. And then you move into acting at that stage. And then the ultimate stage is taking advantage of what you've learned from it. And as they say, never let a crisis go to waste. And then you prepare for the next one that comes up. That's why hurricanes, you know, 100 years ago, a hurricane was a cataclysmic event. And over the years, the decades, we've pretty much normalized hurricanes.
Mm.
And particularly so until we had the big one, right? Katrina.
Right.
And then Katrina was a system failure where the entire government response system failed. And then after Katrina, we rebuilt ourselves. We picked ourselves up off the ground and we rebuilt ourselves and built a stronger system. And my research shows, from a leadership point of view, you know, hurricanes are not really an extreme crisis as we see them today. Now, the same thing with the pandemic. You know, we were in that denial stage early on. Well, this is just the influenza. It's just another version of the influenza. We deal with, you know, again, the optimistic bias by Americans. We deal with influenza every year. This is just another version of that. So I think for a leader to not be blindsided by these events, you have to understand those tendencies that leaders have. And then as you face the event, recognize those and break those tendencies. And that means bringing people in with fresh ideas, fresh thought, relying on experts, but not over relying on experts. So you have to step out of yourself and out of your company's culture or your government's culture and say, where is this going on a strategic perspective?
What interests me is, you know, the part about leaders should, you know, rely on the experts, but not rely on them too much. How does a leader navigate those two things and be able to balance it out?
Right. Well, that's deference to expertise is a big challenge in an extreme crisis. You have to have experts. When I went to Japan for Fukushima, I had experts on my team, very scientific experts on my team, but you can't let them run the team. You rely on them. You realize, first, a leader has to realize that you're not probably not the smartest person in the room, but you need to know who is, right? And you have these experts, and oftentimes you need their advice, but you have to challenge them. You have to challenge their assumptions, because often, most of the time, these experts have assumptions that they make. And then you have to challenge those assumptions and challenge those facts that they bring to you. and challenge them to make sure you understand their motives. Mm. So they call it anchoring decisions in facts. So Governor Thornburg in Pennsylvania taught me this from the Three Mile Island nuclear accident. He was a prosecutor in Pennsylvania, and he when he faced Three Mile Island, he prosecuted the facts that these experts would bring to him, and he prosecuted the fact bringer. Okay, what is their motive? You know, what interest do they have in this fact, this science, and where did they get their facts? So you, as a leader, you need to defer to you need to rely on experts, but you can't overly rely on experts.
And as we see playing out in Washington, D.C. and in state capitals and cities across America, there is this push-pull between competing priorities. In some places, it's risk versus reward or science versus politics, open versus closed. Different leaders acting in different ways. Our own resident football fan, Mac Rosenberg, likens it to a coaching staff in football.
I see a leader, you know, in the way that you're talking about relying on experts as sort of a head football coach, right? You have your experts, your offensive and defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator, coming to the head coach and saying, I think we should do this, I think we should do that. And the head coach is relying on those coordinators and making the big decisions, like whether or not to go for it on 4th-and-1 or kick a field goal or something like that. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. You have the specialist, but you don't put the specialist in charge of the team,
right?
In charge of the offense or the defense, right? They're specialty people, and you rely on them. And a kicker says, I can make a 50-yard field goal. Okay. You know, have I seen him do it in practice? You know, is this the right wing condition? So you just don't take his word for it that he can kick the 50-yard field goal.
Right.
You know, you also look at what are his assumptions? He's indoor. You know, what's the wind? What's, you know, so you challenge those experts.
Right. So the leader is sort of a fact checker in that respect.
Right. You have to anchor your decision in facts. Right. And I can tell you Thornburg, I'll just tell you a quick story. There was a theory that there would be a hydrogen explosion in the reactor at Three Mile Island. And so they wanted to evacuate the area. That was a theory. He talked to the emergency preparedness people, and they said, hey, look, we just realized that our emergency preparedness plans for these two counties conflict with each other. We're both using the same bridge to go in different directions. So when he had a decision to make about evacuating people, he had a theory on one side, and he had a fact on the other side. Right? So he boiled it down to, okay, which way do I go? I know for sure that the emergency plans don't work, so I'm not evacuating. And, you know, these scientists over here, these experts are giving me a probability, a theory. So you have experts giving you this theory, but then you have facts on the ground.
Right. You talk about communication and organization during a crisis. That's a little bit different during the pandemic than when you were in Japan, because, you know, here you have the states and the federal government in some cases at odds with each other. How do you see this playing out?
Yeah, that's, you know, and that tension can be good. It can bring out new ideas, new thinking. And, you know, so there are positive parts to that. It helps, though, obviously, to be as aligned. We had that same problem in Japan with the Americans wanted a 50-mile evacuation and the Japanese wanted 18 miles, right? And that causes a lot of confusion. The Japanese said, well, the Japanese government's not protecting us. They only want 18 miles, and the Americans are telling us 50 miles. So you're going to get these disagreements. They have to be worked out in, you know, case by case and individually, and the leaders have to harmonize on what's best for the people. That's the bottom line, is you have to go back to your mission and test every decision you make against your mission. You know, this decision that the governor's making, is it good for our people? Is it good to protect our people? The challenge you have in a lot of these events is what the academics say is that social justice will always overrule technical justice. And that in an extreme crisis, that adage really, really stands out. And what that means is, it's like, the scientists today are telling us that you need to shelter and you need to social distance, but you have protesters out there that are saying, you know, we don't want that, right? So you have the social justice piece, which is the protesters, and you have the technical justice piece, which is the scientists. So then the politicians are, you know, they have to make a decision about, you know, do we, the, you know, the people want one thing, but right. the scientists want another. So it's better if the decisions are made locally.
Right. Region by region.
Right. Because they know what the people, what's needed for their individual state. It's, you know, I've always found that unless you have a truly extreme event, which means that the people on the ground are worried about their own existence, that they're worried about dying themselves, unless that's the case, then closer to the event that you can make the decision, the better off you are. And an extreme crisis that I study, oftentimes the leaders are worried about their own mortality. And when that happens, then that changes all their decision-making. And it's, you know, my fight or flight, it's self-preservation at that point.
Yeah.
So if we got to that point, then the national government would have to take over. Would that happen to Katrina? You know, the whole system broke down, the state, the locals, the federal system broke down. You know, that was a what I call a system failure.
Yeah. You talk about leaders and seeing their own mortality. Some leaders that have been in the spotlight these days are President Trump and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Right.
How would you assess their differences? Because we're seeing their leadership strategies every day play out and examined in all different facets.
Right. Well, they definitely are. They have two different leadership styles, obviously. And I think each of them, you know, there's trying, you know, it's arguably, I mean, you know, there's people on both sides of this thing, but arguably they're both trying to do what they think is the right thing to do. The governor obviously is closer to what the needs of New York are. And he also was looking farther ahead. I mean, there was a criticism. He asked for too many ventilators. He did this. But that's what you have to do as a crisis leader, right? You want him doing that. And then the national government has a broader perspective and said, well, wait a minute, maybe you don't. But I want the guy on the ground to get ahead of the event. What happened, I think I say it in the podcast, MacArthur's quote is my favorite quote of all time, when Douglas MacArthur said, the failure in war, in all wars and all battles, can be broken down into two words. And those two words are too late. Too late to do things, right? Too late to bring the soldiers in. Too late to bring in fuel. Too late. And so what you want Cuomo doing is what he did was say, hey, I'm looking way down the road and I could use all, I don't want to be too late. Right. And that's OK. It's OK for him to do that. That's what you want him doing. And then the national government comes in and says, you know, we're providing what you need. We'll give you what you need. We understand what you need. And they tried to do that as best they could. So I think, you know, I don't think either one of them is at fault in that regard. I think they're both leading from a different position on the Hill.
Right. Yeah, the idea of nonlinear thinking and you know, that interested me. Along those lines, the New York Times recently reported that once a vaccine is ready to go, we could need as many as 600 million doses.
Right.
Let's just say people need two shots, 300 million people, and the same amount of syringes. So, you know, that may seem, at this point, a vaccine may seem like a small problem because we're not even – you know, by a lot of estimates, it's a year to 18 months away. But is that something we should be thinking about right now? Leaders should be?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Should be, you know, that you have to be what I call faster than the event. You've got to be ahead of the event. If you get behind the event, then it will cascade. Yeah. And the old saying, a cup of water can put out a forest fire if applied at the right time. So you've got to be ahead of the forest fire. So you need to be thinking way down the road. Also, and as I said in the podcast, you have to be thinking about mutations. I mean, we're headed towards one vaccine, what if this thing mutates? Another virus of a different kind comes up. Are we preparing that far down the road for these other eventualities that might happen? That you need to at least be thinking about those and how you would deal with those. Or what if some other event happened during this time? Some other major catastrophe happened during this time. So I need not a single, they call it, path dependence. I don't want to be completely dependent on one path, the vaccine. I want to be out ahead of that, and I want to be looking into other paths as well.
Which would include antibodies, right?
Right, that's right. You may not need those 500 million doses if you don't do enough antibody testing, right? But then again, they say that there's rebound and other people who have had it may get it again, but it could be a different virus, not the same virus. So all of these paths, you need to be thinking about all those different paths. And also the unexpected. What could be the unexpected that could happen right now? What is the worst thing that could happen to us under a pandemic? What is the worst catastrophe that could happen under a pandemic? You need to be thinking about that.
Yeah, some might argue, though, that, there are that the leaders should be focusing on what's happening right now, and that,
that's what I want the governors to do.
Right.
That's what I want the governors to do. But I want the national government, FEMA, national government, to be contingency planning. So everybody has a role. I want the governors to be focused on the ground and what they need and what they will need in the near term. More tactical, right? But I need the national government to be thinking more strategically.
Yeah. You talk about also the flow of information, and we talked about it a little bit with the fact checking and the free flow of data, which we see every day out there. How difficult is it to lead during a crisis like this with so many different outlets of information?
Yes, too much information can almost be, as harmful as too little information. At Fukushima, we were blind. We had too little information, but here it's almost the case where you have too much information and you have too many opinions, too many. You have to establish a strategy. And if that strategy, if you've confirmed that strategy, so let's say social distancing, if you confirm that strategy is working, then you need to hold on to that unless conditions on the ground say you should change. So all the new data points that come in, don't get distracted by them. Because that's what happened to us early on in Japan was we kept chasing every little data point that come in, and it distracted us from the strategy that was working. Water into the reactor, no radiation out of the reactor, right? So unless you have absolute proof that your strategy is not working, you need to stick with it. And you can address those data points that come in. You can, on the side, I call it the goalpost. Keep your strategy in the goalpost between the best worst case and the worst case. There are no good cases. Keep it within there, and unless some data point comes in that confirms that you're on the wrong strategy. Let's say that it comes in and confirms this is an airborne issue. Okay, that's a complete change of strategy. If this thing's airborne, and carried by the wind or something like that. Well, this social distancing strategy isn't going to work. So now you have to have a different strategy, right? So with all this flood of information, you have to keep focused on what is the mission, protecting the people. What is my strategy? Is my strategy working? Don't get distracted.
One final thought from Dr. Casto. He appreciates the role of the media these days in this crisis and deep dives into topics like this and in science that reporters like Mac Rosenberg are doing. But he adds this note.
Well, I would like to see more scientists on the Hill, more scientists as members of Congress instead of so many lawyers. And I would love to see the media get back to having solid science reporters and science and technology reporters that are like you and that are really digging into this, right? Like you are digging into this hard So, and not political reports. Is that making, I don't know much about the reporting business, but you know, what you see today is, it seems like a lot of political reporters, political science people and that. I would like to see more people with technology backgrounds becoming reporters. It would help to challenge those scientists.
Well, maybe we do need more scientists and doctors as reporters, like medical reporters, because they know the facts about this.
That's right. And I don't want to get into criticism,
right,
blame finding, but just give you an example. And this is apolitical. Having the press briefing in the White House invites a certain kind of reporter. If you had the press conference in NIH, or you had it in CDC, or you had it in FEMA, you might get a different kind of reporter.
Our Mac Rosenberg with nuclear safety and crisis expert Dr. Charles Casto. You can hear more from Dr. Casto in his podcast series, Crisis Leadership, the Coronavirus Edition, from Diversion Podcast. And ours? Well, we're 880 In Depth, WCBS 880 In Depth, to be specific. We ask you to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Just put in the search bar WCBS 880 In Depth. Thanks. Talk again.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer,
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait. There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.